This is Brightside Home Theater.
Hey, home theater nerds, welcome to the Brightside Home Theater Podcast, the home theater podcast that's all about the experiences, the sights, the sounds, the scenes, all that fun stuff. I got a lot to get to today. One being, we're back. We're going to be breaking down Con Air. Going to have a lot of fun with that one. We'll get to that in a little bit, but I want to talk about a couple of other things first. One of the things I'd like to add to the show is what I've been doing this week, what I've been watching. So when I'm sitting here down and I'm going to break stuff down, I'm going to, you know, if I don't have a guest on, I'll tell you what I've been doing in my theater. So what I've been doing is I'm going back through the Star Wars saga. If you haven't been listening, I've mentioned it here. I've mentioned it on my other podcast as well. But I'm going through the entire Star Wars saga. Started with, A New Hope. I go 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, and then 7, 8, 9. That's the way God intended. So that's the way I watch them. And it quite literally, God did intend it because that's chronological. That's when they actually took place. So, hey, go with time. But anyways, so my chronological, not the chronological of the movies. But anyways, so I went in that order. And I'm just having so much fun watching them, like almost scene by scene. And I'm watching these not as a one sitting per movie. It's like if I get a half hour, I'm watching that. So I'll get a half hour and I'll watch a half hour of a scene. If I get 40 minutes, I'll do that, whatever. But what was funny is when I got to the end, I did the entire original trilogy, then went back to the prequels. Prequels, like I've said before, don't look very good. They're just too digitized. They look gorgeous. It's a beautiful transfer, but the technology at the time was so rudimentary for CGI that I just don't think it plays very well. I've said that before. Let's fast forward to, I'm now into Rise of Skywalker this week. And that is by far what the sights, the sounds, the scenes, that's going to be one to break down. I believe I'm doing that one with Tom Andre, him and I, we talked about that one a while back and, we've got some fun stuff in store for that, but I'm about halfway through that one right now. Really, really nice. All three of them are the best looking and sounding of the Star Wars saga. The latest three, Last Jedi, just awesome, awesome scenes, beautifully shot. The opening part, the battle scene at the end on that salt planet or whatever, I can't remember the name of it. Really cool. But other than that, I'm also jumping around. I'm Total Recall watching that. Almost did that this week, but obviously Con Air, we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. That one was, that's looking really cool. Doing scenes on that. Lawrence of Arabia, because that happens to be popping up this week. People are going to be doing reviews on that. Lawrence of Arabia, Bridge Over the River Kwai, went back and watched some Psycho. Trying to think of some other stuff. Sucker Punch. Oh, so good. 4K on Kaleidoscape. So, so good. I love that movie. Just so much fun. Obi-Wan, watching Obi-Wan. Still, I've talked about this on Takeover Tuesday with my guests, but some of the best HDR that Disney Plus has put out, I believe. It just looks so good. The pictures are so well shot. Looks really, really nice. The Boys, not in Atmos. Really sad. Still sounds really good. But that as well has a really nice picture. Sad because it's kind of gross. I mean, they're hitting you with everything. People are exploding all over the place. But The Boys on Amazon Prime looks so good. Some of the best HDR I've seen them do, 4K HDR. But it's only in 5.1. But upmixed in my room, sounds really, really nice. So can't argue with that. I'd like to touch on an email I got this week, kind of fired off a thought that I would like to give everybody. And it kind of plays into what is a great home theater, what I talked about a couple of weeks ago, and stuff like that. And the email came from Paul. And Paul had some questions about his receiver. He's trying to run Dirac on his Integra receiver, and he wasn't happy with the results. And he put his question to AV Rant. I believe it's the last question they answered last week, if you want to go back and listen to that. And they give some great answers, and it basically came down to room treatments. Okay, so basically, I'll give you a quick rundown of what Paul's going through. So he ran Dirac, and he feels like it doesn't sound as good with Dirac on, with the room quote room correction on, and it doesn't feel as loud. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit when we get into Con Air as well. And what's funny is I think what he's experiencing, and this is what the AV Rant guys say, Tom and Rob say about it, is that Dirac is doing its job. But when you don't have room treatments or enough room treatments, that there's only so much that Dirac can do. But what room correction is trying to do is it's trying to eliminate those reflections in the room. And when you do that, the best way to do that is to lower the volume, right? So like if you've ever played pool, if you want the ball to bounce really hard off of the bumper, you hit it really hard. High volume, right? If you want a slight bounce off of that bumper, you just tap it, lower the volume. Same idea. So if you're trying to lower the volume of the reflections coming to the microphone or to your ears, you need to lower the volume on those certain frequencies, because what that's going to do is it's going to give you more accuracy. And that's what room correction, and I always put quotations up for room correction, because that's what it's trying to do. It's not room correction. And they say that on AV Rant as well. What it's trying to do is give you the most accurate depiction of what each speaker is doing. And here's why I had to give you a little background of that. This is all very repetitive if you heard AV Rant, because they basically say the same thing. But what the misconception is people think they go by statistics. They know Dirac is supposed to be better than Odyssey because Dirac is more user integrated. Like there's a lot more you can do with it. But they both, at the end, they're both capable of the same thing. Odyssey EQ can do kind of the same thing if you get the extra app with it. There's so much more you can do with all of these things. But at the end of the day, all you're trying to do is make your room more accurate. But accuracy means, like I just said, it's what you just want to hear what the speakers are doing. So like an anechoic chamber is basically, it's a room where the microphone or your ears feel like there are no walls. So it's like you're in the middle of an open field, no reflections. That's the problem. It's like no reflections, no other sound, nothing else. So the sound coming from the speaker goes right to your ears, but there's no other sound bouncing off of anything else, just like you're in an open field. So whatever you're hearing is coming directly from the speaker. That's what you want nowadays. Back in the old days of home theater, when you had, 5.1, it wasn't even 5.1. We had ProLogic. We utilized that bouncing around the room to create ambient effects. Well, nowadays, you would almost want your room to be an anechoic chamber, because you want each of those Atmos speakers or your Dolby Surround upmix or your Neural DTS Neural X upmix. You want those speakers to be the only thing you hear, because they're working together to create the sounds where they are in the room. Any reflections are going to interfere with that. So if you don't have a well-treated room, you're going to be interfering with you know, your objective of trying to get nice, clean sound. But here's the rub is a lot of people don't know that. They read statistics. They read manuals. They read about this stuff. And they everything to a lot of people is very statistically based, but they don't understand that you need this stuff in your room. There's not a lot of talk of room treatments, of setting your room up to be like a theater, to absorb as much sound as possible. So people get this stuff home and then they think it's loud and they think that's what's great. And I think what happens in like Paul's case is that louder seems to be better. And that's not the case. Accuracy is better. So ironically, for what his room is when Dirac is on, that might be the better home theater experience for accuracy. Very similar to what I learned back in the 90s when I was told, bring, you know, set your levels to here, your brightness levels to here. This is what you want when you run your reference discs. And if you, especially back then, if you calibrated your television properly, it would feel dimmer. But what they told you to do is get used to that. Get used to that dimmer, because once you do, you're gonna get more out of it. You're gonna notice more details in the darker scenes. And that is very true. A lot of people think that brighter is better, and brighter is great when it's supposed to be, but you don't want it super bright all the time. So a properly calibrated TV to most people, it seems dimmer. But when you put it into a dark room, and again, when you calibrate your televisions, you should be calibrating it to the room setting that you're always watching movies in. So if you're watching movies with lights on, you calibrate your television with those lights on so that you can get those black levels to where to is to be as accurate as what you're going to perceive during a movie. Obviously I calibrate my room in the complete darkness because that's what I watch the movies at. Same for sound. When you're calibrating for sound, that's what the room, you need those room treatments. And if you don't have those room treatments, it's probably going to bring it down a little bit. And again, just like they say on AV Rant, you put out two subwoofers or you run and you calibrate that correctly, it might feel not as much bass as you're used to because you're just used to bass pounding you in the chest with, from, you know, your towers or whatever, like the Lee Overstreet story. But now you're getting clean bass. You're getting it, you know, proper and discreet and accurate. Makes it a lot better. And it, now you're going to get the bass when you expect it. So there's so much more, but people need to just experience this stuff for a while. What I would recommend Paul does is run it on Dirac, get used to that, and then try to get used to the accuracy that you're experiencing there, because I don't think Dirac is bad, and I'm pretty sure you didn't do anything wrong, but not 100%. But try to get used to that. And then as you add room treatments, what you're going to find is as you run Dirac again and you add some room treatments to your room, because I'm pretty sure you said you don't have room treatments. As you add room treatments to your room, you'll notice you'll be able to, it'll play louder, but now you'll still have that accuracy there. So everything's a compromise, but you can't just go by statistics. You have to go by the experience in your room and what you're looking for. If loud is what you're looking for, then go with that. There's nothing wrong with that either. But if you're going for accuracy, and usually somebody that's running, you know, Dirac is looking for accuracy, trust in that. Or try to hire somebody to come in. But that's where you're going to get into somebody. You're going to notice pretty quick if you're going to be able to trust this person. Because if you get into this whole thing and they don't mention room treatments, then I wouldn't trust anything they have to say about adjustments on your receiver or anything in your room. I've had one person to my room I've told the story by the receiver, and he first thing he said was, you have the room treatments, you have the room. This is the way to go. So his first comment was about room treatments. So again, he could have sold me anything, and I wanted speakers and he told me what to do. So I trust him. And that's what to look for. So like I said, I just wanted to get that out there, and I wanted to start trying to do a little bit more of this, answer some emails here and there. There's going to be a lot more of this coming in the future. A lot more fun stuff like that, but let's get to Con Air. So Con Air, 25 years ago, as I sat down to watch it and break it down, it was 25 years ago. I believe it was June 6th. My son's going to be 25. He was born in 97. He was born in November of 97. So I remember 97 very well. I believe I saw this. I'm pretty sure this was a midnight showing for me. I was doing midnight showings back then. Obviously, I go way all the way back to the original Independence Day. I did on a midnight showing, and I believe because of the way the 4th of July fell that year, they got this out early. Like it was like a Wednesday night, or it came out on Wednesday, so I saw it on a Tuesday night at midnight or something like that for Independence Day. That is. So by the time this came out in 97, I had buddies from different people that were like, all right, I'll go see that at midnight. Cause that was a legit midnight showings when you had to see it at midnight. They started the movie at 12:01. Nicolas Cage. I mean, the list of people in this movie, this is so much fun. It's like Nicolas Cage, John Malkovich, Dave Chappelle's in there. Pinball, Dave Chappelle, Ving Rhames, Danny Trejo, Steve Buscemi. I got the whole world. I know we haven't played the popcorn yet, but I love Steve Buscemi and pretty much everything he does. And him getting, I mean, we'll get to that. We'll get to Steve Buscemi. John Cusack, of course. But yeah, such a great movie, such a great popcorn movie, I should say. An hour and 48 minutes of your time. That's it. But from beginning, and the opening is really good. We'll get to that in a second. From beginning to the end credit, it's, you know, 1 hour, 48 minutes, pretty easy. Jerry Bruckheimer. So, you know, you're in for a ride. He's one of the producers on this. But yeah, so good. So good. But the picture, let's get to the picture first. Gorgeous picture. Vibrant, super vibrant. I'm going to talk about that, and especially the final scene that I break down. Super vibrant, great, great black levels, nice soft grain. HDR could add a bit, but I still think it's a beautiful disc. And speaking of the disc, yes, I broke down the disc and the Kaleidoscape version. And I feel like, I don't know what it is, but I feel like on the Kaleidoscape, the black levels are a little bit better. So it gives you a little bit more feel of HDR, I should say. I felt like on the disc, and I checked my settings and I checked other discs, the disc playing through my Panasonic, you know, 820, it looked great, but it just felt ever so slightly muted, almost like the black level on the disc just didn't go as low. And it goes through the same exact process. It goes right from, you know, from the disc, from the player to the receiver, to the Lumigen, to the projector, all the same settings in between. So something's going on there with the disc that I'm not 100% sure. I don't know I'd have to try a disc someplace else or something like that, but it's not a huge difference. You wouldn't notice a difference if you left and watched at your house. And I say that in the review as well. Cause I broke down two scenes where I really watched very closely back and forth multiple times on both formats. But yeah, I got to give the nod to the Kaleidoscape. And I know a lot of people are like, well, of course you do, but I do. And like I said, I know there's people that are in my area, more than welcome to come and refute it. Check it out for yourself. And I think you'll see and hear what I see and hear. But yeah, it is either way. It's a beautiful disc. Have fun with it on disc. If you don't have it, I think you can pick it up pretty cheap. I didn't even look. I do own it streaming on Apple TV, and it, not even close. Don't go there. It's just not as vibrant, not as good. Doesn't come close. But the audio, let's go to the audio. This is very interesting. The disc had PCM 5.1. It wasn't Dolby and it wasn't DTS. It was PCM 5.1, but the Kaleidoscape had a DTS Master Audio 5.1. The PCM on first glance going to sound louder and you're going to be like, whoa, no extra punch. I got the rumbles. I got the punches. I got all of that, but it just sounds a little bit like a decibel or two louder than the DTS. That PCM sounded louder, but the DTS Master Audio sounded so much more accurate. And I break this down in one scene in particular, really, really, it was really evident there. But it's just such the detail there was so good and so enjoyable. The dialogue was better. I didn't break down the dialogue per se when I get into the scenes on between the two, but I felt like the dialogue was just a little bit crisper. When you watch the movie as a whole, all the way through, as opposed to the disc. And again, very, very minor differences, minor differences, not saying the disc is bad at all. It is just like, I feel like it's just a little bit louder, but, similar to when I talk about IMAX versus Dolby Cinema, it's like one's louder than the other. So it feels a little bit more muddied, I guess. I don't know. But again, it's a 1% difference, 1%. And you probably wouldn't notice a difference. You may notice a difference on the sound going from here to a different house. Maybe you would notice that, but all right. Tons of ambient sounds, great dialogue, tons of pans. I had a lot of fun with this one. So without further ado, let's get to this. Let's get to this scene. And I love this opening scene. This Powers Booth doing the voiceover. But before that, in the opening credits, we get the thunder rolling overhead for the actual credits. The room just explodes. Sounds so good. Deep, deep bass. And then we go into that grainy footage, file footage of men in battle at war. And all leading, that grainy footage is setting the tone. It's setting your eyes up. I felt like you're like, oh, okay, a lot of grain here, everything that's going on. But then, boom, you come to present day, or at least for the movie. Present day, and the first thing you see is the American flag in those nice vibrant colors, and everything looks so crisp, especially that flag against the green grass on the ground, because you're looking down at the flag. It looks so good, and I think that's all set up with that grainy footage that you had leading up to it. But the sound too, the room, like I said, the room's alive. You can hear Powers Booth sound so good. I actually looked it up on IMDb, and according to IMDb, it says he's credited, but unconfirmed and uncredited, which is weird. But his name is in there and it's attached because it sounds just like him. But then it goes from there. You go from looking at a close-up of Nicolas Cage, and then you go to the bar and the vibrant colors inside the bar. And it's like such a nice setup that this picture looks so good. I really, really enjoyed this picture. And this scene really sets you up so well, like I said, with that grainy footage and then leading into the vibrant colors of the flag and then the bar as well. All right, let's move along to 3 minutes, 35 seconds. I called it self-defense, and this is where Cameron Poe and his wife are leaving the bar. It's raining outside, so the opening part of this scene is you get the rain coming in sounds really nice. Even though this isn't an Atmos, I was upmixing it with Neuralex, and it sounded so good. The sound overhead sounded really nice, but then as the fight ensues, we get the louder, the score, you get the thunder ramping up. The thunder overtakes your room. the score ramps up, but everything feels to elevate in your room. In my room, at least, it felt like the score and obviously the thunder were moving over my head, but then the nice crisp sounds of each of the punches of the switchblade when that opens up and you get the ching, and that sounded really nice on the screen. Everything was properly placed. Everything sounded really good, but it got louder and louder, as obviously more ominous as the fight started to take place. Really, really cool scene. Check how that scene builds up. All right, moving along to 5 minutes, 35 seconds. Con Air. This is the title. Comes up on the screen. We get bang, and it sounds really loud in your room. Just comes right at you. Little bit of a feel in the chest. Then the thunder and the clouds roll over the prison. Really nice there. Upmixed. Sounded like it was rolling right over my head. But then we're back. Here we go. They close the jail cell door on Cameron Poe. And of course, it tracks perfectly across the front of the room. Tick, 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 bang! Onto the, I believe it was the left side of the screen. So good. We got that pan, got it out of the way. Third scene, we're back. Let's have some fun. All right. Next up at 10 minutes and 10 seconds, the jailbird, two boxes of popcorn, because now we are really back. I gave this two boxes of popcorn because it's another fantastic pan. Please, please pay attention to this. So Cameron Poe, if you started at 10:10, you should come in right when Cameron Poe and Baby, I think his name was. Let me look that up in a second. They're walking out of prison, but then they go to the plane that this movie's going to take place on, right? And the plane is pulling out of the hangar, and they've got a close-up on the graphic on the side of the plane, jailbird, right? But the doors are opening to the hangar. And where are the doors while you're looking at the logo? They're behind you. And they come, the pan goes from your left rear all the way back across you to your right rear. It is awesome. Nice. And it's so gradual. It sounds like there's a big, heavy door behind you rolling past you. So good. Two boxes of popcorn. When you can, I mean, it's one thing when you get a nice pan across the front of the room or you get a jet swoosh going front to rear, but when you get a nice slow pan like this, sounds like a heavy door, top quality right there. All right, let's move along to 19 minutes, 30 seconds on board. Now we're inside the jailbird and prison guards talking, he's walking down the aisle, we're settling into the plane, but listen to the ambient sounds you get. There's a hum, there's a low hum of just the plane, okay? But then you're also getting like a vibration sound as well in the room, like things are shaking. But there's tons of detail, but here's one for you to check out, for you to focus on. It sounds like on the right side of your room, up high, there's something squeaking. Something needs a little oil. Something needs some WD-40, but something up there is going, like something in my room is going, and it's not my room because it's not playing right now and there's no sound. So, but there's something in the plane making that noise. And it's stuff like this that makes me want, like when they filmed this, this is obviously on a set. This isn't going on. And the sound designers, what are they thinking? Like, let's throw some noises in here. And is it that, like, literally, is this like a high-pitched maraca that they're using? And they're like, let's place this over here and it'll sound like something's rattling around. But listen to all the details and stuff. There's a lot of them and there's a lot of different levels to the ambient sound, too. It's all subtle, so stop listening. Like, take your ears off of the dialogue for a second and listen to everything going on around the room. There's a ton. I'm not sure if I have it stamped out here somewhere, but where you can really tell, especially in this movie, is when they jump from the plane scene and then go into an office scene with John Cusack or something, and you'll notice like your room changes dramatically, and they both have ambient sounds in them. But this is a lot of fun because all the way through the movie, there's ambient sounds inside the plane, so it's pretty cool. All right, let's jump up to 28 minutes, 10 seconds, ticking. I gave this one box of popcorn. What I really like about this scene is it sets a tension that until you know that's there, it's actually probably subliminally, easy for me to say, it's probably affecting you in a way you don't even know about. So the reason I set the timestamp at 28:10, that's where I want you to start this. So it's got Cyrus is talking, everybody's talking, you hear the ambient sounds I just spoke of. They're inside the plane, stuff's going on, but they're just it's just a conversation. But the DEA agent is getting ready to pull his gun out, and it's in his sock. So a few seconds, maybe 10 seconds after this at 28:20, I think, he pulls the gun out. And notice you're going to have to jump back and forth to see where it actually happens, because it's pretty much right when he starts to get up. You can faintly hear it there, the ticking. But then it becomes very prevalent as things settle down and they're just talking to each other and to standoff on either end of the plane. But back up again to the 28:10 and you'll see that ticking isn't there. So as soon as he pulls the gun and he grabs his hostage, the DEA agent, and then Cyrus falls behind the girl, you got the woman on the plane, the guard, you get that ticking noise. And in my room, it felt like it was up on the right side, maybe towards the middle for me, like hovering off the wall a little bit. But it you got that tick, 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 like, hey, the pressure's on here, the ticking time bomb, whatever. But it's stuff like that that I think actually plays on our emotions. Meanwhile, we're like invested in the movie, like what's going to happen here? What's going to happen here? But it happened. You hear the ticking all the way through, and then it goes away after the standoff's over. But it wasn't there until he pulled the gun, which I thought was really cool. So check that one out. All right, we're going to jump up to 37 minutes, 50 seconds, swirling wind. And here we have Dave Chappelle is in the cockpit getting ready to take the tracking device out of the plane. Now they've landed. There's a windstorm going on outside. And just before he's about to leave the cockpit, you'll hear that wind swirl for the first time. I think it was the first time that it happened while you're looking at them in the cockpit. And it's a very minor one. Not minor. I mean, it's distinct. You can hear it there, but it's not as loud as what you're about to get. So you're looking at them in the cockpit. The guy piloting the plane hands them the tracker. And you hear it go from left to right, like whoosh, right around you. Really cool. But then Dave Chappelle gets out of the plane, sneaks out under the undercarriage, from the landing gear, foreshadowing. but yeah, so he gets out. But now it's really going around, because now you're outside the plane. And now it's literally circling your room. The surround sound in my room actually pivoted that sound, that whoosh, it felt like it was moving right around my room. Really, really cool how that worked out. Obviously this isn't Atmos, but you don't need Atmos to move sound around your room on the bass layer on a 5.1 mix. I happen to have 7, so it probably moved a little bit smoother around the back of me, but it still spun all around the room. Sounded really, really cool. Really enjoyed that. Nice, nice effect there. All right. Jumping quickly to 41 minutes, 4 seconds. Do not open. One box of popcorn. Here we have John Cusack tells the guards at the prison, don't touch anything. Well, of course, what are you going to do? Of course, you're going to touch something. It's like somebody telling you not to laugh at a funeral. Guess what happens? At least to me, anyways. So anyways, do not open. They open the lunchbox, and really quickly, we get an awesome explosion. The explosion takes place, blows the door right off the hinges down the hall, and you get that pan overhead of that door. All the while, the explosion is growing from the front of the room to the back of the room very, very quickly. But it seems like the door is like slightly, ever so slightly ahead of it. And this is like a 1 second race, like from the beginning of saying 1 second to the end of a second. It's like that fast. It goes back across your room. But I watched it a bunch of times, Blu-ray, Kaleidoscape, back and forth. This is another one where I should say another one, but there was, this is another one where the Blu-ray is louder, but it's not as accurate. It didn't, because it's just so much louder. So I don't feel like the sound was as clean, and the, you still get the same thump in the chest. Awesome sound in both. Awesome, awesome scene, but also pay attention to at the very end, you hear that piece on the side that's stuck into the wall next to John Cusack on the left side of your screen. You hear it sizzling, but it's sizzling right where it should. Not like off to the side, like my speakers are off to the side of the screen. But it's actually pulled into the middle, obviously by the center channel, closer to the middle, I should say. And it sounds like it's coming right from where it is on the screen. It's not inappropriately placed like another movie I know where the sound actually is supposed to be on the screen, but it sounds like it's 10 feet to the side of the screen. I don't like when that happens. This is appropriately placed. Sounds great. The scene takes all of like 2 seconds for what I'm talking about here, but there's a lot of detail to it and a lot of detail in the picture as well. The explosion looks beautiful. I mean, the reds, the yellows, slightly enhanced on the Kaleidoscape, but even on the Blu-ray, check that out. The depth and the contours you see inside that, it's like a nice cloud of fire, but it's not. It's an explosion. But the way that comes out, it looks so good. The reds to the yellows and the oranges in between. Gorgeous, beautiful looking shot for special effects, especially. And then you get that door flying over you or whatever. And it just goes right over you and you hear it clank behind you as well. While you're looking at John Cusack, you hear it settle after it hits the wall or whatever. Really cool scene. Like I said, really quick, lots to it. And that's why I gave it a box of popcorn. All right. Jumping ahead just a couple of minutes here. Oops. I'm sorry. I meant, jumping ahead 10 minutes. I thought that said 42. It says 52:55, Landing Gear. I gave it a box of popcorn, and this is where Ving Rhames is told to go check out the landing gear, and he has to open the trap door. And when he does, like I talked about earlier on board, the surround sound, everything in your room is the ambience inside this plane is really alive in your room. Every scene inside this plane is alive. Until you open the trap door and you realize, wow, it's really quiet in the plane. So he opens the trap door and now all of that wind comes. It really comes alive. Then he closes it and it gradually goes away as he closes it, or timed perfectly with the closing of the trap door. Then he yells back to Nicolas Cage, Cameron Poe, and he yells, "Poe!" But the echo, because you're further away from him, they actually have some dialogue as Nicolas Cage comes up to Ving Rhames and they actually converse, and their dialogue there doesn't have as much echo because you're standing right next to each other, right? Just the way it would be if I was talking to you in a room, but then I yell to you from across this tin can, it's going to sound more echoey. Really cool effect there. Then after they're done talking and Ving Rhames talks Cameron Poe or Nicolas Cage into going down there, he opens it up and the room comes alive again. And the scene goes on from there, but pretty good transition of sound in your room there. Lots going on, like I said, and I really like that echo, that tin canny echo from further when he's further away. That's a nice little touch of detail there that they didn't necessarily have to do. All right, now we're just jumping ahead just a couple of minutes. 55 minutes, 5 seconds, Pinball, one box of popcorn. And this is where Dave Chappelle falls out of the sky. So if you started at 55:05, you should be getting him just about to hit land. And what are the odds? We'll get to why this gets one box of popcorn. But what are the odds that the guy named Pinball hits and then causes all these cars to cha-ching, ping, bang, 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 just like a pinball, just bouncing everywhere. Cars bouncing off each other all over the place because the pinball came in and set everything off. So Pinball comes in, lands on there. Nice little, like, calm music playing, whatever it is. That's playing through as all these cars are hitting. But here's where I get a box of popcorn. I don't know if you know where I'm going with this. But at the very end of the scene, just before they jump cut to watching the jailbird fly through the sky, they have it looks like a mom and her daughter walk in front of the camera, but they're like practically blurred out because they're so close to the camera and the camera's focused on, you know, the car wrecks, and they run by, you know, in front of the camera, like really close. Perfect, perfect pan. You're going to have to listen to it a couple of times, but you can hear them like chitter chattering, like in panic, like, ah, whatever. But it goes right across. But it doesn't, in my room, it didn't go across the front of my room. It went across like right in front of me. Like it was closer to me than the screen, if you know what I mean. So it's like, I'm the camera, and because they're that close, it felt like it was moving, it panned from middle of, like, from like 3 o'clock on my side to, oh, I'm sorry, it goes from left to right. So from 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock. And if my rear channels are actually slightly behind me, actually, I'm sorry, no, my rear channels are probably roughly at three, you know, at 3 and 9. So these would be about like 10, and it would go from 10 to 2 right in front of me. And it sounded really good. I had to watch it a bunch of times and I'm like, but it's very subtle it's very quick. They run right across the screen, but it does. It starts on one side and you can hear it more prominently as it gets to the right side. Really, really cool. Really cool. If it was any longer or more discreet, I probably would have given it 2 boxes of popcorn, but instead I gave it 1 box of popcorn. One, not two. All right. Jumping up to 1 hour, 5 minutes, 50 seconds, buzzing the tower. If you start it right here, 1 hour, 5 minutes, 50 seconds, you're going to get 3 really nice pans quickly as the jailbird comes in on the tower. John Cusack's in the tower. And at first you see it coming at you and it pans from front to rear. Then I think again, you get another shot. They pull away and you get another shot of it actually going over the tower front to rear. And then after that, you get another shot of it coming from the left rear to the front of the room really quick. All jump shots, all like jump cuts, I mean, and very, very nice. Quick pans buzzing the tower. I mean, come on. I've seen Top Gun how many times so far? And I had to have that reference in there. I didn't even know that reference was in there when I picked this movie this week. Obviously, I told you why I picked this movie this week. But all right, let's jump up to 1 hour, 19 minutes, 50 seconds. Sayonara. So this is where Cyrus throws a cigarette into the gasoline or jet fuel. And the explosion happens. Lots to break down here. Lots of fun. 2 boxes of popcorn for this one. This is the other one that I broke down for back and forth. I really, really broke down back and forth between the Blu-ray and the Kaleidoscape. So first off, this is where I really felt like the detail was lost in the Blu-ray a little bit at reference level. It's just so loud and, I mean, muddied, I should say. It just didn't feel as clear. The PCM didn't feel as clear as the DTS Master Audio 5.1 did. So what happens is the explosion happens and you get a whoosh, but it was like you could feel it, like not like a punch. It felt like a whoosh, but it panned because it took over the guy that they were killing. I forget his name. But the pan went from left to right. It was like a whoosh. So that's the first part of it. That's just the flames engulfing the plane and the people there. And it just, really, really nice effect. Beautiful looking as well. Again, vibrant, vibrant colors. A little bit lost on the Blu-ray compared to the Kaleidoscape. It seemed, if you weren't here doing an AB, it looks gorgeous on the Blu-ray too. But compared, it felt slightly muted, if that makes any sense. It just didn't feel as vibrant. So there's that. But again, if you watched it here on a Kaleidoscape and went home and put the disc in, you wouldn't notice any difference. I think you would on the sound. I think you'd be like, wow, it does feel clearer. Cause what I'm going to tell you about, first that pan felt more clear. But then there's an explosion. When the explosion happens, actually, like, boom, not just the whooshes. There's a barrel that goes from front center to right rear, and it like shoots across your room. It's still there on the Blu-ray. It's just more evident, and you can track it better with your ears on the Kaleidoscape. But then where the real detail I felt came in is at the very end, where now things are coming down. The explosions are still going on. Your room is still going on, is still engulfed with this sound. You get the debris starts to come down, and I believe, was it Cameron Poe? Was it Nicolas Cage got blown to the ground inside a shed or something? But then the pieces of lumber land on the right side of your screen, and you get that sound. You get the sound of wood clanking against wood, like on the side. On the Blu-ray, it was barely there. I almost want to say that if I wasn't going back and forth, if I didn't watch this on the Kaleidoscape in the first place, I might not have picked it up. But now knowing that it's there, I can hear it and I can see it. And it is there. But on the Kaleidoscape, it's just that much more distinct. It's really nice. It's just, it's not overpowering. It's appropriate. It's just a little bit more clear. And it is noticeable. So, like I said, the Blu-ray, excellent, excellent Blu-ray. Just trying to give you a couple of the little differences that are here and there. All right, let's move along to 1 hour, 23 minutes, 50 seconds, fall back. This is where they get ambushed. The quote, good guys are coming in. They're going to get slaughtered. They're coming down the pathway that they've laid out for them, set up all the propane tanks. Just watch this. That's why I put it in. There's way, way too much to break down. You have pans of like police cars going by left and right. You have, propane cans exploding and shooting. There's dialogue. There's slow motion scenes. Beautiful, beautiful picture. Nice explosions set against the beautiful sky, the beautiful blue background. There's so much going on, so much to take in. This scene takes quite a while to play out. But again, there's dialogue, there's people talking to each other. That's what dialogue is. getting repetitive and starting to repeat myself. redundant and repetitive. But anyways, so much to break down here. So much. So just enjoy the scene. That's basically what I came up with, because I'm like trying to, there's just so much. So, all right, with that, that's that 1 hour, 23 minutes, 50 seconds. Let's jump up to 1 hour, 29 minutes, 6 seconds. Sweet Home Alabama, Leonard Skinner. If you start it right here, you get the line leading up to it. And then you hear those first few notes of that song. It just sounds so, so good. It starts at the front of your room, quickly moves into your room. But all this scene plays out, you get three great pans of the plane leaving. So you get pans front to rear, a little girl waving goodbye, so you know she's okay. But then you get inside the plane and, Sweet Home Alabama still playing. And it feels like now it's in your room taking over. Again, dialogue crystal clear. You get the Steve Buscemi's definition of irony, which is fantastic. Like I said, the room's alive. Listen to the people singing along and cheer. It's more like cheering to the music. You can hear that. I heard a little bit on my left, but it sounds so good. But the music, crystal clear, but then the dialogue is as well. And again, you get a lot of ambient sounds. You got jet sounds of whooshes going over you, especially during the pans. Really, really cool scene. Let that one play out. That's a lot of fun. All right, couple left here. 1 hour, 32 minutes, 40 seconds. God does exist. This is where Cameron Poe, Nicolas Cage, gets up from Baby O, and he says, I'm going to show you God does exist. And I mean, your room's already alive. It's an action scene here. We're getting going. But now, you know, the Ranger comes out, and he's going to end all this right now, once and for all. And just pay attention to the chaos that's going on. You're going to get, you know, helicopters panning back and forth across as they're trying to block each other. One's trying to block the other one from getting a good shot. You've got bullets flying. You've got the guns off of the helicopters are flying, shooting. But the dialogue, so good, so crystal clear, not too loud, but perfectly, like, loud enough that you can hear everything that's going on. Cyrus yelling at Cameron. It just everything, the punches, the glass breaking when the guy is coming at Cameron Poe. He's like, that's it. And he smashes the glass. There's so much going on, but everything is so clear. So there's so much to take in as you watch this scene over and over. And that's, I mean, it actually starts before the, you know, Cam gets up and says, God does it, or I'm going to show you God does exist. But there's just so much here. Just let this thing play out. And again, this is another one of these movies where, you know, Jerry Bruckheimer, here we go. Just so much fun. So much fun. So really enjoy that. That's why I gave it a box of popcorn. It is kind of a demo scene. Not a ton of bass, not hitting you in the... there is a ton of bass, but not a ton hitting you in the chest here. But it's the details that, like, I could use this when somebody came in and be like, check this out and listen to these details that you probably wouldn't pay attention to, because it is utter chaos. But at the end of the day, it's like when you break it down, it sounds really, really good. And each sound sounds really good. So, all right, here we go. 1 hour, 35 minutes, 40 seconds, Vegas, 2 boxes of popcorn. How do you not end on this scene? I mean, there's a small chase scene after this, the fire trucks and stuff, and it's really good. But this is basically the culmination of the movie. This crash scene here, as ridiculous as it is so much fun. Sights, the sounds, the scenes, the entire thing. So the sound, amazing. Absolutely amazing. There's some punches in here, some explosions, some contact, some hits that you can feel, vibrations in the seat all the way through, pans coming through as the plane is skidding down the parkway, whatever it's called, skidding its way down the road. And it goes across your screen left to right. And then things passing by, the propeller towards the end of the scene comes off and goes to the rear of your room. The entire thing, it's just chaos. But again, so clear, so well done. It really is an amazing scene. It's a demo scene for sure. That's why I gave it 2 boxes of popcorn. But the picture, it's an unreal picture. This is the scene that you're like, it needs HDR, but this still looked so good. Even, you know, the Blu-ray looked really nice, but the Kaleidoscape had a little bit more depth to it. And it felt like the blacks were deeper here with the Kaleidoscape. And maybe that's why, like earlier I said, it feels a little muted. It just, the blacks didn't go as deep on the Blu-ray. But it looks amazing. Imagine what this will look like if this was ever to get a 4K restoration. It would look so good. It would just be the lights of Vegas against the night backdrop. Speaking of the night backdrop, check out some of, like, where you could see up in the top part of the screen. If you could see the skyline, sometimes it's bluer. It's nice. It gives you that nice halo of, like, Vegas hitting the sky. So it's blue. It's not just always jet black, especially at the end when the scene plays out and you got the helicopters on the right side of your screen, the buildings, and you see the blue sky behind it. Really, really gorgeous looking scenes. with that night sky, but there's so many colors. The colors of the police cars, the emergency vehicles, the bright neon of the street. I mean, there's just so much to take in that you set this one up and just say, okay, hey, sit down, demo time, and this is one you're going to want to play, and just let them behold the magic that is home theater. So yeah, really, 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 that's why I wanted to end on this one. Again, the fire truck scene, really cool, but this one here is just, this takes the cake. So that's my breakdown. It's been a while, but hey, it's the 25th anniversary, as I said, 25 years since this came out. So much fun. That's why I had to do it. I'm watching this, breaking this down on the anniversary date. So check your calendars. You'll see when I'm doing this. But yeah, really, really cool. Thank you everybody for this. Is, you know, multifaceted podcast, having a lot of fun here. There's more fun coming, We're adding more stuff to Brightside Home Theater here. And thank you everybody for watching. Thank you everybody for listening. Thanks for playing along. If you'd like to take part in the podcast, you can always join me on Takeover Tuesday. And all you got to do is email me at brightsidehometheater@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Twitter and I'll put you on the schedule. Got another one, another great one coming up next week. Can't wait for you guys to hear this one. It's a little something different coming up next Tuesday, for another first for Takeover Tuesday. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you to everybody that's stepped up so far, everybody that's joined me on Takeover Tuesday. I know it's not easy to do. People are nervous. I don't blame you at all. Been there, still get there sometimes myself, but it's just a fun conversation that we have. And everybody that's been on it's not what they thought it was going to be. It's just more fun than they thought it was going to be. So thank you to everybody for stepping up. Thank you everybody for listening. Hey, it's summertime. It's blockbuster time. How about we go push play? Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production, with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.